Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
This week on Outcast World, as the show celebrates being nominated for Best Interviews Podcast at this year's British Podcast Awards, we take the show to Edinburgh to chat to one of the UK's brightest queer comedians as he takes his one-man show to the festival.
Hi, my name is Quang Wen, also known as Wang Wen.
We talk about his show at Edinburgh, his thoughts about Men Called Andrew, based on his exes and a few naughty Andrews in the news, obviously, and his worries for his home nation of Taiwan in its standoff with China, which could be the trigger for World War III. It's what some experts are saying. How does he feel about China as someone who's carried out national service for Taiwan and as a queer person? This is Outcast World.
Okay, so it's an exciting point, isn't it, at this point when you kind of arrive in Edinburgh. I've been to The Fringe twice. I've worked a few shows at The Fringe. I've never had my own show, not like you. But yeah, I've been a few times and like worked with some of the comics and the people who've got shows on and absolutely loved it. Can I ask the first question I ask everybody at The Fringe, which is what's the living arrangements? Because when I one of the times I went, we worked on a TV show and I had to stay in a single bed in some student halls that we'd hired because everything was booked up. But what's going on with you?
Well, I'm lucky enough to find, because you know that the rent has been rising year after year, and I used to be able to afford, I mean, it's not the cheapest, but I used to be able to find like a small place on my own or like a decent Airbnb room in the middle of the city. And now I've retreated to, some people will rent either like a big flat, and I stay in a student residence hall, one with a 12 room sharing three bathroom and one separate toilet.
That sounds like what I did years ago. Do you have a double bed or a single bed?
I have a slightly larger single bed, just enough for a larger guy like me.
So one of the first things I did when I got there was like, right, The Fringe, it's got to be queer coded all over. Let me get straight on Grindr. And, it was so much fun when I was there. Oh, have you logged on yet?
Well, I don't have Grindr. I have another app that's mostly used in continental Europe, and there's another website-based one. Funny enough, though, as soon as I got here, someone messaged me, and they are in London, and I look at the picture, I'm like, oh, it looked quite tasty, but why do you only message me when I'm away for a month?
So it's slim pickings on the app that you're using. What are you using?
I use something called Gay Romeo. It's not particularly popular in the UK, but it does get something. I don't know. I'm slightly wary of using Grindr during Fringe in Edinburgh. I was just like,
what's the reason?
I don't want to accidentally say you have a really bad hookup and turns out the other person is like someone important in the industry. Do you know what I mean? True.
I want to chat about your show. It sounds so funny. I love it. And I think you've really picked up on something. You said that Andrews are the worst.
Because they are. They are.
You have to explain this. I loved the way it was stitched together. It's from life experience. And if you look out in the big wide world, I take it as well.
Okay, I'm just going to quote something objective. As soon as I made the world know about my intention of doing this show, another very seasoned circuit comic DM me and say, I've been saying this since the 80s. Thank you for finally proving my point, right? And then I came up to Edinburgh Stan in June, and in a green room, another comic heard my show title, and then he say, yeah, now that you mention it, you know, like couple of, and he started to mention specific Andrew, like a comedian Andrews. I had to take out this bit in a show, but originally I was like, there's something fishy about Andrew because you can't be exactly sure, because many British name or English name are very specific to a social class, so you wouldn't have a plumber called Hugh, right? But you wouldn't have like a university professor, not a lot of time, called Gary or Barry or Derek.
Kevin, right? Or something like that. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But Andrew is very class fluid. And even David, right. Even David, you have a posh David, but you have a geezer dive, right? But
yes.
But even Andy and Andrew, they are both class fluid, so that's make very suspicious.
That's true, yeah. So for people who haven't heard the connection between the people, the reasoning, the workings out as to why Andrews are the worst, could you just outline that for them right now?
Right, I just want to say I want to leave Scotland in one piece because the patron saint, after all, is Scotland. Well, I wrote the show in London. I forgot I'll bring the show to Scotland. So please forgive me, Scottish people. So Andrews are the worst, basically, is a name that rhymes with you. So that's a very bad sign to start with. And yes. The name Andrew comes from a Greek word. Basically, the original meaning of the name is something like warrior or like courage. It's very like,
didn't know that.
So it's basically toxic masculinity, so a second bad sign. And thirdly, the reason I mentioned this show, because for a while there are a lot of bad press from Prince Andrew and Andrew Tate. Like, these two supply 80% of bad press about Andrew, right?
And
I remember once jokingly I talked to the other comedian. I'm like, oh my god, I have two exes that were both called Andrews, and I didn't intend to do anything about this because these were like old memory, more like 10 years ago. I think I have closure about the two relationship until one of them texts me again on the first day of January this year. And the pattern is like he only texts twice a year or once a year, and every time. Okay, so every time I block his number, he will move on to, I don't know, for example, Facebook, or move on to Instagram, or move on or try to message my private account, and I block it, and he will message my Facebook comedian page, for example, and block it again, and he gets a new number. And he will always say something like, please respond. I just want to know you are well. I just want to know you are safe out there, things like that. But ultimately,
he can see that. He can see you're thriving, can't he? He can see that. He has social media.
Yeah. Maybe it was a mistake. I didn't have a stage name. I mean, my name is the same on LinkedIn and on British Comedy Guide. So I remember before I quit my last office job, I went to an interview. I was just like, should I mention I'm a comedian or not? And they're just like, so we found that you're also doing comedy on the side.
How did that go down? Did they like that, or were they like, oh, that's a bit risky for us?
I think the younger generation, if I'm interviewed by younger generation, by that I mean like a millennial, they're generally fine. I think people, they are Gen X or above a boomers, that's slightly worried out when I say something disparaging about the company, etc. But these days, everyone can do anything to harm a company. For example, the CEO that went to the Coldplay concert.
I know. Wow.
You know, that guy's called Andy as well. See? Prove my point.
He is. Honestly, when you stitch it together, you're more than onto something.
That woman's husband is also called Andy. I mean, that woman is onto something.
Your show touches on queer East Asian identity, interracial dating. I hate the term interracial dating. My husband's black, and between us, we don't really say interracial. We say, like, we can't really come up with the correct terminology. We're like, is it inter-ethnicity dating? But I don't know. There's something about the term racial makes me feel a bit awkward. Queer East Asian identity, inter-ethnicity dating, Grindr, rom-com delusions. Is it fair to say that, like, your show, your Edinburgh show, is part trauma dump? Part warning, part comedy.
Okay, it's very hard because I obviously have to provide some buzzword to attract media's attention. And I don't want to deny there is this I think interracial already sounds a lot better than rice queen, potato queen drama, right?
Like, it sounds 100%. Yeah, right? We're moving in the right direction, aren't we? There, yes.
Yeah, instead of saying me as a white dick chaser and he's looking to be drawn in a sea of rice, I think interracial already sounds at least pedantic and academic.
Yes.
I gone through faces. There were faces I tried to deny there's a possibility people only like me because of my race. But like, it always happened. I've dated people who were not rice queen, but then after me, they only dated exclusively East Asian people. So I'm like, okay, I'm kind of a converter or something. I feel for the very young generation, the type might have turned because of Korean culture, K-pop. But in general, yes. I think in the queer, at least in a gay community, I'm talking about gay men specifically, the East Asian Oriental culture, even the word Oriental sounds offensive, but it's considered more feminine. And that's mm-hmm. why it is. So you can say there are different races being sort of discriminated in other domain, but at least mm-hmm. in gay dating, gay sex, I think they are kind of like there's niche appreciation for different minority. But mm-hmm, for mm-hmm. East Asia, we kind of have to play the quiet, submissive, almost like a wife in a homosexual relationship role.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And very often is a white guy, a white top with an Asian bottom. And quite often you see the OnlyFans, their operators, they are Twitter account. I feel dirty to say the word Twitter, but they are Twitter account. They call themselves like big white dick of Asian bottoms, and they are like mm-hmm. white daddies. So it is kind of the thing. And when I dated these two Andrews, they were all kind of closeted. They were like half out of a closet, but they say they are the kind of school. They say that my sexual preference is my privacy. I don't need to make it public. You know, this kind of nonsense word. And so they never talk about being gay with their colleagues or people. They are also a little bit, I feel one of them has a lot of, is a very compartmentalized in his world. I didn't get to meet anyone else in his world. And one day he said to me in their early dating, days, he said to me, I finally talked to my flatmate about you because I feel like it's time. But I want you to know, I'd say that I'm dating a guy called Henry because I used to go by an anglicized name, Henry. And he didn't try to describe my detail. He just said, I'm dating a guy called Henry. He said that he said it instead of my real name. And I was going by my real name already. I just say mm-hmm. that long time ago, my parents used to call me Henry. He say that so that his flatmate wouldn't suspect he's a rice queen. And that really made me think that, is it that shameful to be dating me or to be dating someone who's East Asian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
You mentioned something before about, I think it's broader. I can't quite put it into words how you said it, but it was very well put, about how in the gay sex world, in the sexualized appreciation of men, there seems to be now more of an acceptance and it's more widespread. For a broader sort of, for men from a broader spread of ethnic backgrounds to be appreciated. And it's finding the difference between appreciating a broader, spread ethnicity wise of men. There's a fine line between that and kind of fetishizing and solely, I only go for such and such kind of person, focusing on that, which I think can be almost negative, can't it? I know that, Black men in particular find this as a thing. There's kind of the idealized vision of how a black man would be and all of this. And there's finding that attractive in the broad spread of things. And then there's kind of fetishizing it, which I find maybe problematic. What's your take on that more broadly? Because you sound fairly qualified to make a comment on that.
Well, even in my show, I have been talking about, I have a fuck buddy who is also, black. And mm-hmm. I think it's a tough line to tread because as a comedian, there are jokes I make. Sometimes I feel like it's not 100% PC, but my view is that, okay, let me put it this way. Before I move out of my home country, Taiwan, there are occasionally mm-hmm. some Caucasian walking the street, but there are not a lot of different minorities. So I never slept with different ethnicity other than East Asian and white. Before I left
Taiwan.
Is this
Taiwan. When you're in Taiwan? Yeah.
And when I got here, initially, tentatively, I was like, oh, I don't know how it's like. But then I've lived in London for 20 years by now. And you get mm-hmm. used to it. You just get used to it. And you don't really think it's that big a deal. I don't want to be of the very sort of ideal school side. There's no different. I don't see color. I do see color. It's just like, okay, color is just only one factor. And yes, I have sexual preferences. I like different men. I've tried different men, but I wouldn't say. I just think that the world is more. I think the world doesn't exclude some minority group as much as it used to, because I really need to. We need to give credit to the much younger generation. They've been brought up in a much more liberal, progressive way, even though it's quite polarized. But at the same time, people are just used to seeing different races in big cities.
Do you not think, right? You don't know until you see. Like me and my husband both talk about this. for me, I didn't really think about it as much, but he said, like, he didn't really particularly look at other black men until he was in his 20s, because the world around him was set up in such a way that this was only a certain kind of look.
Yeah.
That he was told that you need a man like this in your life. And it was generally a kind of like white, blonde, blue eyed kind of thing. And yeah, it took probably for him to get to almost 30 before he was like, hang on. And we have to, I don't know. It's interesting how that's come about, because obviously I'm a white man from the north of England, and I feel like I had the same experience myself. You don't know what you find attractive until you're alongside it with more options, I think.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of night market, but you have like, you know, some gourmet market. Like you see the first stat, it looks delicious, but you're not going to make up your mind what's your favorite until you walk at least halfway through the market, right? And exactly. I feel like that's what every gamer is facing. I think, I don't want to say there's no difference. So you first, before you know the idea, the real idea of diversity, that it's just a vague idea of a race, a different race, right? And then you get in contact, and then you start to see people more complete, like in a less, it's not as sort of vague, but you still see people as a representation of a race rather than a person. But when you get so much contact exposure to different people, that you see people as people. That's what I think how human brains work. And also at the same time, I think it would be too naive or even too simplistic to say that there's no difference, because for example, Asian have very thick, much thicker hair compared to Caucasians. And before the shaving peep culture arrived in Taiwan, I sometimes joke, like when I give another East Asian man a blowjob, I need goggles, because the peeps like just stab into your eyes. You know, almost sometimes they are so rough, like sponge, the one you do your dishes with. Like it is so rough.
It's difficult for some people, especially in the context of the last few years as well, to make certain commentary. And I feel like you're in a unique position where you can make these comments. And I don't feel like people are going to be offended by you doing that. Do you know what I mean?
I like what the context for me as a comedian, I'm able to sort of go out very close to the line a little bit. But the stereotype, but just to own it, because I may be wrong, but that's not be so afraid or not being able to talk about many things. Like, let's at least be able to talk about it. We joke about it. But if I'm wrong, I will then admit I hold my hands out. You know, that was not right. That's not correct. That makes people uncomfortable. But that's not all be that sensitive. I'll give you an example. There's a common joke, like racist comedian do. They would say that, Asians have smaller dicks. I even heard it from an Asian comedian myself. I don't have a particularly big tool. But what I noticed when I go back to my home country and I have like fun is so now or meeting people up, I notice, I don't know whether it's because of the change in diet and nutrition, but much younger East Asian people tend to have bigger penises right now.
Really?
I don't know whether it's scientific, because it can be a bias, right? People having bigger tools are more likely to go to sex party or cruising.
That's very true, isn't it?
Right.
It's really true.
But just in general, from my non very scientific personal experience, because I've been going to parks since my teenage years, I've sampled and empirical if evidence across decades, and I do think that the cocks are getting bigger. So is
it generally or specifically within your ethnic background? Are we saying generally cocks are getting bigger?
I feel so, because if my evidence and my reasoning is right, the East Asian diet used to be much more carb-based. You eat a lot of rice and you don't eat quite as much meat, because society wasn't quite as westernized and wasn't quite as rich for my parents' generation, for example. So when I was a teenager and I had sex with someone in their late 30s or 40s, they would not be the generation that eats so much like steak or meat.
Yeah.
So their protein intake would have been lower. So this is my reasoning. I may be wrong.
Fascinating. No, it's fascinating. I've never even thought about that. You were born in Taiwan. Are your family in Taiwan?
Yes. They're all in Taiwan. I escaped from them.
So, what, escaped in a good way or escaped in a kind of messed them way?
In a joking way, but my mom is a control freak, and she wouldn't let me live the life I want to live on my own. I think she only half reluctantly accepted that. She would say she accepted that I'm gay, but then she tried to set me up with women. And then she would then say that, you know, marriage is not, doesn't have to be based on love or sex. I'm like, what are you talking about?
It's so fucked up. What is it based on then? Marriage is based on different things generationally, isn't it? And that's really interesting.
For her, it could be economic needs or strategic alliance. I don't want to know more detail of their sex life between my mom and my dad for different reasons. It's just...
Do you worry with family in Taiwan about the next... This is deviating away from the LGBTQ stuff and the Edinburgh Fringe, but the... do you have concerns for your family's safety in terms of at some point in the next few years, they're saying that China will invade Taiwan and make it part of mainland China and
attempt
to reunify it? Does that worry you?
Of course. I just came back from Taiwan. The last week of July, I was in Taiwan I couldn't participate. So there's a very big, 24 district elections, and we have a system called recalls. So it's not very prevalent in other democracy, but in Taiwan, if you think your lawmaker, your MP is shit, it's not doing the job they are supposed to do, if you get enough signature, you can have the election to decide whether that MP will lose his job.
At any point you can do that, yeah.
Yeah, but after a year, after they were elected, and you need to get, 10 or 15%. There were two stages. And once you get enough signature, then you have to get over 25% of the electoral system. So we were suspecting some of our lawmakers were acting as China's agent. This is a lot of infiltration. But what I found...
Which would make perfect sense, wouldn't it? Because that's kind of the thing that they would do in order to infiltrate sort of Taiwanese civic society.
Yes, but what I found frustrating is that when people voted, some of them are ostriches. They bury their head in the sand. But when international news even cover it, like this time the coverage hasn't been great. With the same kind of suffering in different countries don't get the same level of publicity. And I guess what happens in Taiwan, and in Hong Kong, for example, Hong Kong, they were heavy-handed dealt with by the Chinese government, but the Western world have moved on. No one is even interested. There are people still going on trial. There are people gone missing. They suspect being murdered, but no one talk about them.
So people have been disappeared by the state.
Yeah, and even Xinjiang in China, like the West have moved on. Even though the overseas Chinese intelligence people are still targeting the activist, they just don't get the same amount of press. And what happens in Taiwan, we're facing the threat, but we don't show any picture of people bleeding, dying. So it doesn't excite the media. And I feel there's not much I could do. I wrote my previous show all about Taiwan. I think enough people found it. They really want to know more about what happens in Asia. But I feel I was met with this general nonchalance by the critic community. They would be like, oh, people wouldn't be interested. What should we know? I thought if I do a show talking about being a military officer because we have compulsory military service.
Did you serve in the armed forces in Taiwan then? Yeah.
I was. So now I'm a reservist. So my last show, the old angle was about if I go back to Taiwan and the war happened, then I wouldn't be able to come back. Like what happened to Ukrainian men in Ukraine. And it was met with people don't find it particularly exciting. There's a lot of focus on identity politics, but the warfare is not something I feel like the art industry is interested in unless you're actually invaded. Does that make sense to you?
No, it does. I think it makes, I hate to say it like this, but it almost makes greater TV and video clips if there's a war as opposed to this vast, it's an existential threat, isn't it? It's difficult. It frightens me to consider the idea that the next step might be globally, seeing as China and Russia are together, it might be an invasion. Sorry to interrupt. An invasion of Taiwan.
I'm a great supporter of BBC. I hate what the last Conservative government tried to do to them and tried to cut the license fee. Yes. But every time BBC reports on my home country, I'm absolutely pissed off because everything has to be in dictotomy. It's either pro-China winds or anti-China wind. And it's always portrayed whatever happens in our own country, that we are the one that provoked China and that would drag the world down into some sort of regional warfare without actually, it's like accusing a woman just tried to dress whatever she wants. And then you say, oh, you are provoking someone to.
You're asking
just,
for it.
Yeah, you're asking for it. And so they don't really dare to, but it's only recent year. There's enough evidence that China has been having illegal police station overseas that they finally start talking. That. Previously, it was just a very ignorant sort of liberals' views that, oh my God, if we criticize the Chinese government, that's going to make us look racist. And then look what happens
to the rest. Or we won't be able to trade with them, I guess, as well. I mean, they're so reliant on China economically.
Yeah. So in this show, I had to pivot away. I just feel like I need to attract more people because they find me funny. And once I have a much bigger following, my name is more out there, I will come back and talk about this.
I love that. So
I have a joke at the start of the show just to explain the lack or absence of China bashing in the show, but then I move on. And even change the show title to something very, very silly because I realize that silliness is much celebrated. So I'm kind of changed the course of my comedy career planning.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. And then the idea to hook them in with the silliness and the queer stuff. And but it works. It's still, you're doing a job there telling a story. And
you made me sound like a con artist.
And then pivot. And then it's international relations. No, pivot. It makes perfect sense
pivot,
to me.
Like Ross and Friends. Pivot. I have a lot of 90s TV reference in a show. And when you perform to different audiences, you realize
Gen Z.
You are the first British person that heard the word Gen Z pronounced Gen Z rather than Gen Z for quite a while. Graham, I really love that.
Yeah, I refuse to say Z. So the Fringe is, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. How are you preparing emotionally for this year's run? Because it is an emotional, it's emotionally draining, isn't it? All them shows, a lot of pressure, and it's all on you. It's on you. This is your show. You have to be your own one-man band. How are you preparing yourself for that?
I brought 3 teddy bears with me, so that's a starter. I don't go out like party having drinks in the evening in general, but to preserve my voices. The comedian community can be quite cliquey. And so, but that's human nature. And I will also descend into the game of comparing myself to other people and getting jealous, like, oh, why he's getting this, why he's not getting that. But then I always have to roll back and say, you know what, I get to do this. I'm in a quite good position, just to be grateful. But there's an element of, you know, so like people recommending each other show. And then I realize, oh, you don't think of me as your most inner circle of mates, you know, that those kind of thing. I find it very hard to, and, comedians are socially not necessarily awkward, but that we're not the nicest people when it comes to socializing. So,
yeah, I get that.
So there are certain spots in Edinburgh during the Fringe. They are like the magnet for wankers. Like the ass lickers, but not in a sense of dogging. No, I'm talking about ass lickers, like if someone's talking to you, but then see someone more important or more useful to their career than you, they will immediately dump you and go on jump to talking that person. So that lacking the very basic human decent. What I noticed though, with the experience I've geeked with other comedians, the very successful one always are the kindest and nicest people.
Yes.
I think there's a reason they rose to the top. They were able to get there because they act very professionally and they don't make people feel they're off-putting. It's always the middle of the pack that's the worst.
Yeah.
So
I think it's best to keep the target off your back, isn't it? What I've noticed in various places is that I play a different game plan now as a man of 42 to like a kid of 22. At 22, I'd got to be the most confident center of everything. And now I'm like, you know, take my time. I'm going to work out what the fuck's going on. And I'm going to keep my head down and do my thing and not piss anyone off enough that they come for me, you know, and eliminate me. It's honestly, I think it's so true in all of these kind of the comedy in particular.
Yeah, I feel like I've played my bipolar tendency, I think, self-diagnosed, but I don't brag about it. I don't really mention it.
I love a self-diagnosis. I'm here for them.
I think I have a bipolar tendency. So there's a very mean, bitchy, jealous, petty side of me. But there's another side of me. I'm also an old millennial. I've worked in the corporate world close to 10 years before I started doing comedy. So now I'm watching this little brother and sister playing my playground things. I'm just like, you know what? Do whatever you want, because it would be nice if the comedy career works out even better. But if not, it's all right. The reason I do this Fringe partially is because one of the exes texted me this January and it has pissed me off so much. I said, I'm going to write a show and say all the shitty things about you. Right? I'm going to make it public. Okay. The reason I call the show Andrews Are the Worst, I want him next time he Google me, you see, I can see the Andrews Are the Worst is rising when you're just Google Quan Wen. It's getting cold to the top, right? I'm going to.
This is genius.
Get the fucking clue, mate. I don't want to hear from you ever, okay? Because he just wanted me to say to him, you know what? It was okay. He cannot stand thinking himself as the bad guy, even though he's a villain. So I said, I don't want to make you feel better. I want you to be buried. I want you to go to your coffin in shame, right? So I refuse to give him that. That's the reason. But the second reason I do this is because last year, due to Olympics, I wanted to watch the swimmer and gymnast. So I didn't do Fringe the first 2 weeks. And I came out the last 2 weeks and just did a compilation show. And people came to the compilation show and asked me, oh, I watched your previous show. I really liked it the year before. When are you bringing another show back? And I feel like there's no better encouragement than people specifically appreciate your work or even ask where your new work is. And I think that, you know what, I may not be liked by everyone, but you don't have to. You just need to find the people who like you. And this is my sort of continued effort into finding the people that would like me, but a different side of me, a slightly bitchier, meaner, but also cheekier side of me. I didn't talk too much about being gay in the first show, but that's quintessentially the reason who I am today. I think I am able to accept myself. I'm so out of the closet, I dismantled the closet. Because it was an IKEA closet made in China or something.
It was easy. So here's my final question. I feel like you've almost answered it. It's practical revenge. And I've seen this done so many... I've spoke to quite a few comics at the Fringe, actually, that have taken similar sort of inspiration and took it onto the stage. And Taylor Swift, she does it brilliantly. Is comedy the ultimate clapback to a bad ex?
Nah, I say the comedians have a tendency of bigging out comedy. Nah, it's just therapeutic.
It's therapeutic.
I'm going to be honest. I don't
fully... But it feels good, I take it. It feels good to know that this person's going to see this. Okay. And go, you're not going away.
I have to make sure exactly what you mean, because I was only 80% sure. Is comedy the ultimate clapback to the...
a bad ex? Is it a good way of getting your own back on her? Like, you've literally built a show. One of the reasons around it is so that this person sees this on the internet. Do you think that this is like, it's the ultimate form of revenge?
I don't know what's the exact English phrase for that. In the Mandarin speaking world, there's a novel, and that's a guy called Mr. Q. And Mr. Q is the ultimate loser because he may be bullied and he would say something in his head or like whispering behind someone's back, like, I wish your ancestor's grave been dug up by thief, right? And then he would claim it a victory. And this is how it's just some feel good factor. I actually am a coward because I wanted to write a show and film it as a special and put it on YouTube. And despite how I hate my ex, I still have some humanity left. I don't think this show will ever be put on YouTube because some of the things I said about one of the exes are so mean. I was joking in an ageist manner about one of my older ex, and it's really horrible. But it only stays in the comedy room. So I just hope he doesn't come. Please don't come.
What are you going to do if you look up and you see him? You're like, shit, I'll have to change this. Quan Wen, can you tell us where and how we can see the show at the Edinburgh Fringe and where we can get tickets as well?
Yes. So I am at the 4:30, the lovely time between your lunch and your supper. So you wouldn't be haunted by any gas issues. I'd be putting the show at... in a yurt, I think that's more fringy experience than that, at Hoots at Potter Row. So that's the bit just near the underbridge passage near Pleasant Storm. near Bristol mm-hmm. Square, so if people know that. It's at 4:30 every day from the 1st of August to the 24th, not the 12th. And I think it's a lovely model. It's called Pay What You Can. So you can buy tickets in advance for guaranteed entry. And there are four different price bracket depending on your ability to pay, how much you're happy to pay. But if there are vacancies on the day, you can still come in without paying and decide how much you like the show and donate at the end. But you just have to run the risk that if the tickets are sold out, that you may not be able to come in. Yes, I think it's a very fair model. Mm.
All right. So tickets are available on edfringe.com. Apparently, Quan Wen Comedy on Instagram if you want to follow him. Thank you so much for joining us. Fingers crossed the show goes okay. What a great chat that's been. Thank you very much,
Quan Wen. Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.